This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Gas, food, water, and a cell signal. These are in short supply in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. So how do supplies get from the ports to where they're needed? How are Puerto Rican residents communicating on the island and with family back in Florida after the hurricane dealt a massive blow to the island's cell service? What help does Puerto Rico need from the federal government, and what are Central Floridians doing to help get the island up and running again? If you've got relatives in Puerto Rico, what are you hearing about their situation? Are you making plans to get them over to Florida? We're taking your calls 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. We're on Twitter. Send us a tweet at WMFE Orlando. Well, joining us in the studio, Maria Padilla. She's the editor of OrlandoLatino.org. Welcome back, Maria.
Good morning.
Also joined by Andrea Marcial. She's a reporter with Telemundo in Orlando. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Bianca Padro Ocasio, breaking news reporter with the Orlando Sentinel. Bianca, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone, Fernando Rivera. He's associate professor of sociology at the University of Central Florida. His focus is on medical sociology, disasters, and race and ethnicity. Fernando, thank you so much as well.
Thank you for having me on, and good morning to your listeners.
Well, first, I want to just play a little bit of tape from a resident of Puerto Rico. Wilton Vargas is the founder of the technology website Technetico. He lives in San Juan. I talked to him yesterday about what conditions are like a week after the hurricane.
When daylight comes, you get up. If you're lucky enough to have running water, then you try to cool down with a shower. Then you go out, and if you have to hunt for either drinking water or gasoline or diesel to run your generator, or just to get something like ice. And the people, the companies that make ice, they're also running around for diesel. So you go into this hunting expedition during daylight and hoping that you achieve something before curfew starts. At 7 p.m., you have to be in your home, and it's a matter of trying to survive, dealing with the heat. If you live in a place where you have a balcony or some sort of way to be outside in a safe way, then that's what you do until you can't deal with it anymore. Exhaustion brings you down. You go to sleep and you wait for daylight and you start all over again.
Wilton Vargas says while shipments of supplies may be stuck at the ports in Puerto Rico, there are still ways you can help residents on the island.
If you know somebody that has family in Puerto Rico, there is a way that you can help directly, because what is happening is that there's a lot of supplies and stuff to help, but they're stuck at the ports because there is no way for that to be transported where it's needed. So if you know somebody that has family in Puerto Rico and you want to help, contact that person and ask that person to find out what are the basic and immediate needs to see that if they can be fulfilled through a shipment through the United States Postal Service. That way, whatever you send doesn't get stuck at the port. It gets directly to the person, because there are 8 main post offices that are open that started operating yesterday. So this is a way to reach people individually and directly with help besides donating. The other message that I want to convey, Matthew, is the fact that this is the time to contact Congress, because what we're seeing here is a slow response from the federal government. This is not new, and we need this to stop. And there is something very important that we need to remember. Puerto Rico is part of America. We need you to contact Congress and tell them that Puerto Rico needs help now.
Wilton Vargas talking to us yesterday from San Juan in Puerto Rico. The situation pretty dire there. We want to hear from you as well. If you have family and friends in Puerto Rico, what are you hearing from them? Are you still waiting to hear from them? You haven't made contact yet, perhaps? Are they trying to get off the island? And are you helping put together supplies together for them in Puerto Rico? Heading to the island yourself to help, perhaps? We're at 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us on Twitter as well, WMFE Orlando. Maria, Wilton making a couple of points there. Of course, the first you can actually get stuff over to folks in Puerto Rico using the good old U.S. Postal Service. So there's a workaround there, even though there are all those containers stuck in port. Interesting point.
Yes, it is a very interesting point. My understanding is that there are 7,000 shipping containers at San Juan Port at this very moment, and they cannot get out of the port, precisely because there aren't enough people to take them out. drivers with commercial driver's license to actually truck them out of that area. The roads, many roads are still impassable. There are a lot of obstacles to getting that aid directly to people. But since yesterday, when the military actually is now going to take over the disaster relief effort in Puerto Rico, I think we should start to see something different because all of this stuff needs to be airlifted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the road, you cannot travel a road. So it has to be airlifted as if you were in a war zone, quite frankly.
Right. And it looks like, if you've seen photographs of Puerto Rico, it does look like it's been bombed, I mean, in some places.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very sad.
And we've seen that on other islands, too, affected by Hurricanes Irma and Maria. Professor Fernando Rivera with UCF, just put this in context for us. Wilton Vargas making a point about the response from the federal government. From your point of view, how has that response been?
Well, I think the federal government wasn't prepared to handle the magnitude of the storm. And just to make sure, historically, Puerto Rico has been neglected in the past. I would argue that this is just another case where the storm magnified that negligence in terms of our relationship with the United States. And I think it's going on that, you know, we should contact our elected officials and Congress to make a priority to help Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Is that message getting through, do you think?
I think it's starting to get through. Unfortunately, when the storm hit, we had a very difficult media cycle. There was the issues with Hurricane Irma and mm-hmm. Hurricane Harvey. And then, you know, the issue with the tweets on the weekend. So that kind of like died off. But now Puerto Rico is sort of becoming that media focus out here. And I think that is helping and it's bringing a priority to the government right now.
Andrea Marcial, a reporter with Telemundo here in Orlando, what are you hearing from friends and family back in Puerto Rico?
Well, I've heard about my grandmother, about my aunt, but I was mentioning earlier that I haven't been able to actually talk to them. And I think that's the situation of many Puerto Ricans here in Central Florida, not just me. I've been able to interview a lot of people that have cancer, that have daughters that are pregnant and they're not able to get out of the island. And people are desperate to get out of the island. But then again, they don't have the resources to do it. They're experiencing in the airport in Luis Muñoz Marín a crisis, a humanitarian crisis. They don't have air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a situation that is not only me experiencing. A lot of people from Central Florida are not able to get in contact with their family, mm-hmm. and they're not going to be able to get in contact with their family anytime soon.
It must be quite frustrating.
It is frustrating. I mean, it's sad, and it's I work, and I have to put, you know, a face every day to be calm, to give the message. But then again, I'm experiencing this personally because I have a lot of family over there. My grandmother is by herself. I don't know if she has food. I don't know if she's been able to get money because it's so crazy out there. People are killing even in gas stations to get it in the front of the line to mm-hmm. just be able to get the first, you know, gas. So it's a really bad situation in Puerto Rico. And I don't think any of us here or over there were expecting that to be like that.
Mm-hmm. Bianca Padre Ocasio with the Orlando Sentinel. You came to Florida about 5 years ago, right?
Yeah. Well, I came here this past summer, actually, but I've been in the U.S. for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what's the situation like for your friends and family that you've heard so far?
Yeah, it's been really difficult, and like you said, you know, the situation for us who are covering this and are having to do this work and talk to people who are desperate and they haven't heard from their families and they're asking anybody for help. So they're asking reporters, they're asking doctors, they're asking anybody who can get the word out. And it's really sad. And I have heard, you know, this morning my grandmother and sister, they were, you know, going to drive to the gas station and expecting to do about 3 hours, a 3 hour long line just to get gas. But it's really difficult because even if you go to the supermarket and you're going to get supplies, like Andrea said, you need someone in the car to wait in case somebody comes in and tries to siphon your gas, or it's kind of the state of alert mm-hmm. and people are desperate. And I think anybody at this point, because we haven't seen those shipping containers being moved into the rest of the island, which I believe actually this morning some truckers were able to get come to agreements with the government to be able to move those shipping containers into the rest of the island. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll see that in the next couple of days.
What's been the toughest thing for you about watching the storm unfold and kind of reporting on it from afar?
I think just watching all the images of on CNN playing all the time, on MSNBC, seeing the streets of San Juan, where I grew up, seeing the streets of Guaynabo. And of course, the first part was the destruction and the desperation and not knowing where my family was, which I know a lot of people are still in that situation and they still don't know where their families are. And I'm hearing from friends, you know, if I could only hear her voice, if I could only know that she's okay, that I want to hear it from her or from him. That has been just the hardest thing for me.
Maria, before we go to a break, I just want to come back to you briefly. And, you know, we've talked about the Jones Act on past shows, talking about Puerto Rico independence and the challenges, the economic crisis there. That act was suspended. A quick refresher, what is the act and what does it do and why was it suspended?
I know. I think everyone is going to know, be on a first-term knowledge about the Jones Act. Jones Act is a 1920 congressional act that essentially says that Puerto Rico must use U.S. flagships for trade back and forth between the coast, the mainland U.S. and Puerto Rico. And lots of people would like to lift that, and there's even a bigger push before the hurricane hit, and I think it's going to be a humongous push afterward because it limits the flagships that Puerto Rico can use, and by doing so, it increases the cost of supplies. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, the Jones Act is known to have a 20 to 30% effect on prices for goods that are sold in Puerto Rico because they must come on U.S. flagships. Mm-hmm. You cannot use foreign flagships. So by President Trump lifting that for only 10 days, which is something but partly not enough, it does allow other flagships to be able to carry goods. Otherwise, they have to kind of go to a U.S. port here, most likely Jacksonville, offload it, put it on a U.S. ship to bring it to Puerto Rico. Why do we have to have that intermediary step? It makes no sense. And on top of that, that's what accounts for that 20 to 30% increase in prices. Mm-hmm. That's not fair or I think tenable on an island where you have such a high poverty rate and in the middle of a disaster right now.
We're talking about Puerto Rico on Intersection. We're talking about the impact of Hurricane Maria on the island and the response in Central Florida, the response from the federal government. We'll be taking your calls after a break, 1-866-338-5252. You can send us a tweet on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Intersection returns in a minute. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. As Puerto Rico contemplates a massive rebuilding effort for its electric grid, infrastructure, and the economy, how can Central Florida help? We're taking your calls at 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. We are going to get to your calls in a minute. Just want to play a little bit of tape here, though. 90.7's intern Emily Lang was at Orlando Airport, International Airport, earlier this week, talking to some passengers coming back from the island. Here's Julie Confuenga, who was visiting Puerto Rico to attend her grandfather's funeral when the hurricane hit.
We put our name on this list, and then when we would walk away from the list, to sit on a bench or something, a new line would form. And then those people would spend the night. And the following day, the flight would take the people that were in the line versus the people that were on the list.
Well, getting a flight from Puerto Rico has been tough. Some Central Floridians, though, are heading to Puerto Rico to help with the recovery. Here's Dr. Jorge Lopez. He's an ER physician from Florida Hospital. He's heading to Puerto Rico. He's in Puerto Rico right now with a group of doctors to do some relief.
We need a major operation from the government in such a way that, you know, it's not like a drop in a bucket. And, you know, I don't want to minimize the good intentions of everyone trying to help. I mean, this is very frustrating. But help, significant help, we'll have to keep in mind that the scope of this project is to help 3.5 or 3.6 million Americans that are living in Puerto Rico. So that can only come from the federal government.
So a heavy lift there. Maybe you're heading over to the island, like Jorge, to help with the recovery. Have you been looking for flights? Did you just return or welcome back some family members? We'd like to hear from you at 1-866-338-5252. Going to go to Jose now. Jose, what's on your mind thinking about what's been going on in Puerto Rico and what folks here in Orlando are doing to help?
Yes, hi. I am working with various student organizations, working class organizations, and religious organizations to collect disaster supplies, medicines, solar panels, mosquito repellent blankets, all the expected necessities. We're coordinating with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. They have a cargo plane flying out of Tampa soon. If you live near Tampa, you can drop it off at the hub, which is located at 5107 North Central Avenue in Tampa. If you live in Orlando, there are many places here that are also collecting. There's Englewood Elementary, the Puerto Rico Federal Affairs Administration Office, Candor Dental, Laurier Park Elementary. So there's lots of people taking action, and we're also trying to organize a volunteer trip once things settle a bit, because the first responders have asked people not to self deploy unless they are licensed healthcare providers or relief workers.
Right.
We're looking at mid December to send a group of volunteers to volunteer with organizations like voluntary organizations active in disaster.
Jose, I wonder, just thinking about the things kind of stuck in port there, and obviously mid-December, that's a long way out, gives you an idea of the scope of the disaster, the length of the recovery. Are you worried that some of the supplies you're talking about are just not going to get to the folks who need them in a timely fashion?
Yes. As your guest said earlier, one thing the island really needs now is people with CDL licenses,
right,
that can go and make these deliveries, as well as I would argue that we also need more helicopters making airdrops and more people working to clear roads and restore services.
Jose, thank you so much for your call. Good luck with your efforts to help coordinate some of those relief efforts. Appreciate you calling. And you can call in as well, 1-866-338-5252. Maria, you made a point about the military getting involved, clearing those roads. This is a job that the military is going to take a pretty central role, right?
Yes, I think the military has to take a big role in this, because they know how to do all of those things, fortunately, in different scenarios and different theaters. But now all of that can apply to Puerto Rico right now. And I would like to say something about the supplies reaching and not reaching certain areas. This hurricane actually sort of swept through the major metropolitan area. And if you know anything about Puerto Rico, you know that half the population of the island lives in the major metropolitan area, which is why so many people were affected. The other thing is that if it's difficult to reach different neighborhoods and towns in the major metro area, it's even more difficult to reach the mountainous regions. Anybody
right.
who knows anything about Puerto Rico knows that Puerto Rico is a very mountainous island, and that there are towns that are actually quite remote under normal circumstances. So after a hurricane, it's probably going to be even worse. And I think a lot of those towns are the ones that are really suffering right now.
Fernando Rivera with UCF, what are your thoughts about, who do you see stepping up and taking the lead in coordinating this massive disaster response in Puerto Rico right now?
Well, you've seen that the military is taking the lead right now. What I think we need to realize is that the diaspora here in the continental United States is taking a central role as well. And I think this is something that we need to think about in the long-term recovery, of how the connection between the diaspora and the people in Puerto Rico is going to hopefully accelerate this process of recovery.
And you are helping with the recovery effort, or coordinating some relief efforts, gathering donations, et cetera, with the University of Central Florida, right? What are you seeing? What kind of things are people bringing in? What stories are you hearing from folks who are trying to help out?
Well, here at UCF, we're very concerned at the situation that is going on. Student groups, faculty, staff, there's different initiatives for gathering supplies and materials. I can tell you also that I've been assigned as a point person for the university to deal with the recovery efforts and how can UCF help the community. Mm-hmm. So we're discussing that very seriously at the top administration levels to make sure that we're ready for the students that are here at UCF, for the community here in Central Florida, mm-hmm. and for those who might come here from Puerto Rico and might need some help when they get here.
Mm-hmm. Bianca Padro Ocasio with the Orlando Sentinel, you've been speaking to some of the folks getting off flights back from Puerto Rico. What kind of stories are you hearing? What sort of challenges are people having if they want to get off the island? Maybe they need medical assistance or something. How easy or difficult has that been?
It's really hard because I think now that Puerto Rico is in this national media spotlight, there are a lot of things about Puerto Rico that I think people don't understand exactly how they work. And actually, a lot of things that happen because people have connections to people who knows someone who works for an aviation company or who works for the airline. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're getting tickets, or you're paying, you know, exorbitant amounts of money for a plane ticket to get here. So those who are able to arrive somewhere on the mainland, they're just shocked. I think here at the Orlando airport, people just they couldn't comprehend, you know, how this home and this place that they grew up in has been completely destroyed. And just rebuilding their lives here is going to be an uphill battle. And I think that's the part where a lot of Puerto Ricans who are here in Orlando do have to play a significant role in welcoming those people.
Mm-hmm. Maria, I see you.
Yes, the losses are huge for a number of reasons. And one of the main reasons is that most of the losses are uninsured. Puerto Rico does not have has a high home ownership rate, but it does not have a high home insurance rate.
Right.
Many people own their own homes, or they inherit their homes from their families, or they live with their families on a second-story structure, which may or may not meet code. And so these losses are all uninsurable. If National Flood Insurance Program is having a problem in the mainland 50 states, could you imagine in Puerto Rico? 1% of the population who owns homes actually has flood insurance in Puerto Rico. And my understanding is that in terms of the actual home insurance, it's like 50% or less.
Hmm.
So uninsured losses are going to be huge. People are not going to be able to rebuild because they have no money. They have nothing to fall back on, which is what we do here in the States, right? You call your insurance company. You say, I have a leak through this window.
Right.
Doesn't happen over there. That's not going to happen.
And that process can be frustrating and time-consuming at the best of times in the mainland United States.
Yes, yes. Can you imagine in Puerto Rico? Because as Bianca was saying, the bureaucracy in Puerto Rico is absolutely impenetrable sometimes. And mm-hmm. I think that has also become a problem in terms of recovery. And again, when we get to do a postmortem on all of this and what went right and what went wrong, I think that's going to become an issue further down the line.
Mm-hmm. We'll take another call here. We've got somebody calling in, Axel, I believe, calling in from the Orlando area. Axel, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. My name is Axel Masol. I'm part of the organization in Adjuntas, Puerto Rico. Adjuntas is a small town mm-hmm. in the middle of the island. And the organization is called Casa Pueblo, which operates with solar panels. And we have battery backup.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we run a radio station called Radio Casa Pueblo, which is off the air on the web, but it's on the air right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been operating 24/7. We're low on diesel for the transmitter. But the radio station, the mayor, it's been using the radio station to organize the cleanup of the town,
mm-hmm.
to let the population know what's going on. All the logistics, it's been broadcast through the radio station.
Right.
And right now we have a program asking people to donate bulbs with a solar panel. We want to lit the whole town, have every house with one solar, with at least one bulb and a solar panel.
Hmm. So just describe for us, you know, where is this town in relation to San Juan? Like, is it far from the capital? Is it in the mountains? Where exactly is it?
It's in the mountains. It's, I would say, it would be like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It's surrounded by mountains, forest. We manage three forests right now, and we built a school inside one of the forests, which it's been damaged, according to my brother. We have this initiative that every if a person from Adjuntas wants to send a message to their family, they could send a 3 megabyte voice to a email. Mm-hmm. They could send it to Axel, A-X-E-L, Masol, M-A-S-S-O-L, at gmail.com. And every other day, someone is going to Adjuntas delivering the messages, and at the same time, it's bringing back messages, which we're posting on our Facebook page, what's going on in the in that particular hometown, because we're very isolated town, and I haven't reached my parents. What I know, it's what my brother or other people are bringing. The page, the web, the Facebook page is called Casa Pueblo de Adjuntas, or you could read, check Casa Pueblo. Also at the webpage, casapueblo.org, people could access the Twitter account and also the Facebook.
Axel, thank you so much for calling in. Some interesting ideas there. Workarounds, I guess, for the the lack of communication, radio, Facebook, sending those messages, which they can then kind of folks can access by going there. Andrea, what are you hearing about some of the ways people are kind of trying to get around the fact that there may not be cell service, or they may be cut off kind of physically from some parts of Puerto Rico?
For people over there or over here?
Yeah, over there.
I've heard about certain people, and the problem is that, again, they're trying to get to certain places. They're not able to move around the island. Some people over there that maybe didn't receive so much damage in their homes, and they have to help, they're not able to help because they're not able to move around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to mention something. I want to mention about the donations, and then they talked about it. And I think that's so important right now to the Puerto Rican over there. And a lot of people are asking, but they're not receiving the donations. They will receive the donations. I think the government of Puerto Rico was not ready, and they want to move, but they're not able to. And it's really, really important that we keep donating, that we keep helping out our brothers and sisters over there in Puerto Rico, because the donations will get to them. Mm-hmm. Maybe slowly, but surely it's going to get over there. And yeah, the situation is that they're not able to move around the island. I mean, the island, it's very small. Mm-hmm. But right now, the streets are not able to get people there. Mm-hmm. So it's a sad situation.
Just want to get another call in here. We've got somebody called Lucretia, I believe, calling in from Cocoa Beach. What's on your mind, Lucretia?
Hi. I understand the devastation is just huge. Mm-hmm. I have an 86-year-old mother, and I know that within days of not having air conditioning and her medicines and water, she would no longer be here. So I'm here. I have a house. I'm 45 minutes east of Orlando. If there's an elderly couple that doesn't have the time left in their life to rebuild what they had, I would think that there's enough of us here that could help in that way and open up our homes. And with our homes comes the care of that next generation, my generation, to take care of those little things that we take care of for our parents. Mm-hmm. Even though they wouldn't be our parents, I think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you so much for calling in. So people kind of obviously motivated, moved by what's going on in Puerto Rico, Maria, to sort of open up their homes. Perhaps some sort of logistics to work around. First of all, getting people off the island, even if it's just for a short time. What are you hearing?
Well, that's what I am doing, actually. I have a brother who lives in Dorado, and we are getting him off the island. And we actually have his ticket already in about 2 weeks, because that's about as close as we can get it. He is going to be coming to Florida, because I also have family in the Jacksonville area. So he can sort of just wait it out here until he goes back. I don't think he has any intention of staying here, but he is also asthmatic, so he needs to be, he uses that inhaler every day, so without electricity, obviously, he cannot use that. So there's a lot of things like that happening where people want to get their relatives at least temporarily off the island to get them some help here until things are kind of ironed out or straightened out in Puerto Rico, which is going to take a while.
Right.
People forget that this is two hurricanes back-to-back, Irma and Maria, and it is bigger than Katrina. So if you thought Katrina was bad when it hit the Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama coasts, this is worse than that.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, sort of talking to some of the folks in the Orlando area who've been coming in to bring donations or help out, are you hearing some of that sentiment from our caller just now? I want to open up my home to help people out.
I have. I have heard a lot of stories of people that want to help from here and get, you know, the people that really need to get out of the island. But you know what's a problem, Matthew? A lot of those elderly folks, they don't want to get out of the island.
Hmm.
They don't. It's crazy to hear that.
But well, it's their home.
It's their home, and they cannot believe, and this gets to my heart so hard, because they cannot believe that that's a Puerto Rico where they spend all their years of their lives. I've heard so many stories of people that want to bring their grandfather, their grandmother that is very sick, that doesn't have the possibilities to stay over there right now because of health, mm-hmm. but they don't want to come here. They want to stay in their island because us Puerto Ricans, we're like that. That's our island. That's, you know, it's so close to our heart. So that's another situation that I think all of us are experiencing right now. They don't want to get out of the island.
That's mm-hmm. called añoranza. We call that añoranza, which is when you have this absolute love and attachment to the island that even if you're here for many, many, many years, you're always thinking of the island. You're always paying a visit. You know, it's always like front and center in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the movement of folks from Puerto Rico to Central Florida, you know, seeking better economic opportunities. How do you think this plays out over the next months and years, Maria, as the island rebuilds?
Well, initially, of course, we're now like 8 or 9 days after the hurricane. Initially, I thought, well, if things get back to speed, up to speed and back to normal quickly enough, I don't think people are going to leave. Because I think, as Andrea was saying, people prefer to stay on the island, quite frankly. If they don't have to leave, they will not leave. But here we are more than a week later, and I'm seeing that this is taking a long time, and not even basic relief has really occurred here yet for most of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Desperation and frustration will set in very quickly, and that may change people's attitude in terms of leaving. They may not just leave the island to wait it out here in Florida. They may decide, I cannot go back. So there is a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tipping point, and I think we're close to it.
Maria Padilla, founder of OrlandoLatino.org, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We also heard from Andrea Marcial, reporter with Telemundo in Orlando. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
And Bianca Padro Ocasio, breaking news reporter with the Orlando Sentinel. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you for having me.
Fernando Rivera, associate professor of sociology at UCF. Thank you as well.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Still to come, Miami-based jazz musicians Negroni's Trio have a new album out. They're performing in Orlando tonight. We'll hear from drummer Nomar Negroni when Intersection returns.
This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Boom, body, boom, bing, ding, boom, 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 body, boom, boom, bing, room.
Nomar Negroni is the drummer for Negroni's Trio. His father, pianist Jose Negroni, and bassist Josh Allen round out the group. The Miami-based trio was nominated for 3 Latin Grammy Awards. They perform at festivals around the world, and they have a new album out. It's called New Era. And this Friday, they'll be at the Timucua White House in Orlando. Nomar, thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you, Matthew. I'm happy and honored to be on your show and to talk to your audience as well.
I want to ask about the track Sweet Georgie Fame. This is one of the songs on your new album, and it opens with this vocalizing. You guys are vocalizing and clapping, and then it sort of segues into the piano melody, and then you pick up with the percussion. How did you come up with that opening riff?
That's a good question, Matthew. It was definitely an improvised thing, which is inspired on Spanish music. When I say Spanish, I mean from Spain, all that bulería, flamenco, which we love. but it was improvised. We were in the studio, and I started singing the bass line, which my dad wrote, the bang, gotito ding. I started singing that and doing some things with my hands, and my dad went, oh, why don't you sing that for the intro? And I said, for real? Yeah. He said, yes, let's go for it. So my dad, Josh, and I, we went to the cabin with them, just one mic, and started playing with it. But with that Spanish flavor, which we love, as I told you. Yeah, it was definitely improvised. Mm-hmm. Something that I have done before just for fun. And my dad encouraged me to do it for this recording. And I think it merged, okay. People like it so far.
And do you launch into that track in your live performances? Is that the way the track starts as well?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. These days, now I have my own mic attached to my head. I feel like a rock star singer now with my own mic.
And there are some songs on the new album where you have guest vocalists, but do you guys sing as well? Is that something you've done in the past?
No. The trio has always been just piano, bass, and drums. And occasionally we have guests, maybe a saxophone player, but singing-wise, it's the first time.
Mm-hmm. As far as kind of the way these tracks are put together and recorded, is it usually something that sort of arises out of some improvisation that you or your bassist Josh Allen or your dad Jose are sort of working out? Is that how these tracks come together, or is it usually more formal than that?
A little bit of both. Usually when it's for our prior albums, which has been mostly original music, my dad, he writes everything. But he, at the same time, he gives us the opportunity and he opens the door for us to be very creative and, you know, just think and put whatever we think it should be on the chart. Mm-hmm. from the heart. And that's it. We play from the heart. But he's very picky. So what I mean, we had to play the chart the way he wrote it. And then from there, and then we start adding and improvising whatever we think it will work out. But I think it's a good combination between writing and being specific and then start improvising and adding anything we think mm-hmm. is going to work out. It's a good combination, I think.
Now, you've got some really interesting collaborations on this new album, New Era. Some standards where you've got interesting takes on the classics. La Piece Consciente, for example, is rapping over the standard Take the A Train. Talk to me about how his lyrics fit into that track.
Well, it's that is interesting. La Piece, he's a very well-known rapper from Dominican Republic and an amazing artist. And this tune, Take the Train, which is, of course, a beautiful classic in the jazz world and just music in general, we twist it a little bit and we add kind of like a funky rap vibe. I'm playing backbeat and my dad did some beautiful arrangement to this song. And there was an open section where we were debating in the studio if it should be an improvisation of a guest artist or maybe even the piano, mm-hmm. or it should be some chorus. And I don't know why I was starting to, just for fun again, I was starting to, you know, saying some words and pretending I was a rapper, and my dad liked it and he said, why don't we get a, you know, why don't we do a rap with the real deal, let's call it a real rapper. So we thought about Lapis right away.
Salud. Trabajo. Educación. Vivienda. Patriotismo. Libertad de expresión.
The lyrics are talking about how tough life could be, not only for a musician, but just for the immigrant who comes to a different city, to a new country to try to make it, all the things they have to go through, taking the train early morning, just being an immigrant and a hard worker. That's the avenue he took, and we loved it.
You also have Rose Max and Pedro Capo guesting on the album. Tell me about those collaborations.
Well, Rose Max, she's a singer from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And she's been living in Miami for the last 20 years. at least. And we know her for a long time, and we have always admired his singing and her musicianship. And we thought about her right away when we knew we wanted to record this track.
And the track is Perfidia?
Perfidia, yes, which is a classic in Spanish. And she sang in Portuguese, so it's a very interesting mix with it there.
Rosas, das orquídeas e das violetas que eu dava a ti.
And Pedro, Pedro is an amazing, well-known singer from Puerto Rico, and his grandfather, Pedro Capó as well, he's a super famous composer and an amazing artist, a legend from Puerto Rico, that my dad got to play with him before he died. And when we decided to record this song, the first song that came to mind was Pedro.
So is the album kind of a bit of a trip into the past for your dad?
Yeah, we could say that, because all the songs are songs that he grew up with. I mean, I say we, but especially him, wanted to record for a while. But now with our label, Sony, they gave us open doors and for us to record whatever idea we had, and this is what my dad wanted to do for a while. Mm-hmm. And it worked out. It's all these songs he grew up with and that he loves, with his own arrangements and with the Negroni's trio flavor underneath.
Now, you grew up, you know, listening to the music that your dad was playing, listening to performances. What was that like? What was that like kind of growing up immersed in that music?
Well, definitely a blessing that I don't take for granted. I mean, I've been hanging out with my dad since I can remember, going to his shows, to being in recording studios, and since I'm a child, and being able to be part of that since you're a kid with your dad, it's something very special. And thanks to that, I got to meet a lot of people. That was school for sure. I mean, just checking out the way he acts with people, not only in music, but, you know, as a man, all the things I have learned, I'm still learning. It's a beautiful thing that I don't take for granted, and it's definitely a blessing.
Did you always want to be a drummer?
Yes. I mean, I remember that I took some piano lessons when I was real young. I was, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, and I took a few lessons, and I didn't like it. I wish... The irony that I love piano. I wish I was a piano player, because I love the piano. Mm-hmm. But when I was 7, I didn't like it so much, and I decided to take drum lessons right away, right after that. My dad supported me, and I haven't stopped.
And was it jazz from the get-go? Like, what was your first performance? What kind of stuff were you playing as a kid?
As a kid, you could say jazz. But, of course, back in the days in Puerto Rico, my dad was doing a lot of shows with, you know, kind of more pop and classical shows with singers, which I love too as well. But, yeah, jazz and instrumental music, that's always been my passion. And my dad as well.
Now, you moved from Puerto Rico to Florida, to Miami in the mid-90s, and you attended high school in Miami. What was that transition like for you?
It wasn't that difficult, but at the same time, it was kind of like a shock. I mean, coming from Puerto Rico, you know, being in a private school with 30 students in my classroom, going from that to going to Miami, to the public system, which was a great school, but there was like 5,000 students. I mean, I was lost. But thanks to music, because they used to have a great music department, a great jazz band, a great marching band. So thanks to music, I got into the jazz band right away, and that saved me, because I made my own friends and I got my own clique in that huge world that was new for me. So I emphasize that we need to support the music programs in school, because it saved lives. It saved me for sure.
So music was your lifeline. Do you do some music education now? Are you kind of helping pass some of your knowledge on to the kids?
I mean, I'm not teaching at any school per se, but yes, I teach privately and I do masterclass. When we travel to different parts of the world with a trio, I do masterclass in colleges or high school. Mm-hmm. So I love teaching and I, whatever knowledge I have, I try to pass it. And knowledge and experiences. But yeah, of course, I love education.
And music education is quite important to your dad too, right?
Oh, yeah. And back in Puerto Rico, he used to teach at the conservatory for 16 years or more. So he loves teaching as well. And he does the same thing. He does master classes and he has private students. So yeah, we love it. I mean, I think it's something that we have to do. It's our mission. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing, so we need to pass it down.
Part of your new album was recorded in Puerto Rico. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, most of the album was recorded there. It's a studio in Caguas, Puerto Rico. The owner is a friend of ours, which is an amazing musician as well. And one of the reasons is because my dad loves the piano that he has in the studio. It's got a beautiful tone, and it's just a great studio. That's one of the reasons. And of course, being home, and you know, being home with our friends, it makes it even more comfortable and very organic.
Obviously, the aftermath of Hurricane Maria is pretty tragic for Puerto Rico. It looks like it's going to be a long time before things get back up and running again. I mean, what are you hearing, and what kind of impact has that disaster had on the musical community in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's pretty bad. I mean, and it's definitely, I think it's going to affect, of course, it's going to affect a lot of things, musically speaking, because I don't think people are going to be interested in going to a show when they don't have water or electricity. But Puerto Ricans, they're hard workers and they love music and they love to have fun. So I'm sure even in the bad situation, they're going to look for ways to try to start their lives again. But it's going to take a while, unfortunately.
So it could be some time before you all are back there performing.
Seems like it. We don't know. We'll see.
What about the studio where you recorded the album? Did that make it through okay?
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, we spoke to him and yeah, nothing happened. But he was very blessed because there's other parts, they're gone. Mm-hmm. It's super sad.
So this will be your first performance, I understand, in Orlando. What can the audience here expect?
They can expect joy and fun and love. It's going to be a fun night, and we're going to be playing music from the new album, and we're going to mix it a little bit with old stuff. So it's going to be a good mix between the old faces of the Negronix trio, but for sure it's going to be fun, and we're going to have some singers as guests. Not the singers from the album, but with two young ladies with their amazing vocalists, and of course the trio, Jose and Josh on bass and myself on drums. And it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys there.
Well, Nomar Negroni is the drummer for Negroni's Trio. They'll be playing at the Timucua White House in Orlando. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you, Matthew, and thank you to your audience. It's been a pleasure.
Negroni's Trio performs tonight at the Timucua White House in Orlando. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Alana Campbell. Executive producer is Catherine Welch. Technical direction from Crystal Chavez. I'm Matthew Petty. You can find me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening. Solito estar cuando me muera. He sido incomprendido. Ni tú ni nadie me ha querido, tal como soy.